Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Jerusalem.
An hour before the opening bell on Wall Street, and Dow futures are up 22 points. This is NPR News.
Brian Ford's business news analysis is made possible in part by Stellar One Bank, personal and business banking for over 100 years, now at the corner of Libby and Patterson. Information at StellarOne.com. Stellar One Bank. Bank brilliantly. Brian Ford joins us now from RBC Wealth Management for his weekly Monday morning analysis of the business and financial news. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Wayne. Hope you're enjoying your fall.
Yeah, nice weather. Well, Friday was an ominous anniversary, yep. The 25th anniversary of the 1987 stock market crash. And I remember how it was really unbelievable because we'd been told that after all the precautions mm-hmm. that were implemented after the Great Depression, something like that couldn't happen again. But it did.
It did. It did. And it was an interesting end of the week. It is interesting, Wayne, that I think there are a lot of these watershed events like the 1987 event, even the Lehman Brothers event in 2008 that will define things for many decades. But you're right. We marked the 25th anniversary of the 1987 market crash by promptly having our worst day in 4 months. Of course, that black day in October 1987 saw market averages drop 22% in one day. So it still overshadows what we've seen recently. Interestingly, though, the market's fully recovered from that episode in less than 2 years. But nonetheless, Friday's action this past week was indicative, Wayne, of investor current concerns about corporate earnings and revenue, particularly in the technology sector. Big earnings messages for high-profile companies have led the tech sector to be down somewhat, surprisingly, over 8% just in the last 6 weeks. The reasons, there are a number of them, but a couple. Prices are coming down very fast for tablet computers, and also regular PC sales are just not good. This week, we have lots of market-moving economic data. Of course, as you know, the last presidential debate will be tonight, and that is very important for investor interest. We also have our first peek at third quarter 2012 GDP. Plenty more corporate earnings, including Apple, coming up this week. Jobless claims, new home sales, just a cornucopia of data there, Wayne.
There was some good economic news from China.
That is true. Good news from China on the economic front. The last several months, you and I have been talking about that there's considerable angst in the marketplace as to whether this gravy train of Chinese economic expansion had been derailed. Now we get data from August and September that tells us things are actually doing better than expected. For starters, their GDP came in at almost 7.5%, which is right on target. That means it did not dip into the 6 range that a lot of people had thought. Remember, Wayne, we are kind of mired at 1.5%, so they're about more than quadruple our rate. Also, China's industrial production was up 9%, and retail spending among Chinese consumers was up 14%. That's a good number. These are the positive signs that have meant that the flow of money in their economy remains very active. By comparison, U.S. money flow has been very stagnant now for about 2 years. Now, a word of caution about China. Many analysts have noted that sometimes data is murky or unreliable coming out of their one-party communist establishment. So does this mean that we're still not cautiously watching the country that owns 30% of our government bonds? No, of course not. But what it does tell you is this. Their new leaders are taking over the reins of China in less than 6 months. And though the days of 10% GDP expansion may be gone for China, you better believe that they're going to do everything they can to keep their employment steady and the exports flowing.
Bad news for retired people who depend on Social Security for much of their income. The cost of living increase effective January 1st is going to be quite low, ostensibly because the rate of inflation has been low. But that doesn't really make sense to a lot of people who have seen certain parts of their budgets rising sharply.
Yeah, I totally agree with where you're going with this, Wayne. The Social Security Administration did quietly announce at the end of last week that the cost of living adjustment for 2013 will be the princely sum of 1.7%. That's it, you say? Yes, that's all for senior citizens that they're going to get in a world, as you mentioned, where food and fuel prices are rising faster than that. Social Security tried to catch up last year with a 3.5% bump in payments, which was nice, since there was zero adjustments up in 2010 and 2011. Now, does anyone out there really believe that inflation is really only 1.7% per year? How about health care and assisted living costs for older Americans? They're going up between 6 to 10% annually. And what about college costs for the boomers who are sending their kids to college? They're increasing between 5 to 10% a year. So how did the Social Security Administration pick 1.7%? Well, no doubt they simply looked at what the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond is paying, and you guessed it, is paying 1.7% right now. You know, I'm not surprised, really, that Social Security folks are just trying to forestall Social Security being empty in 20 years, which is what the current prognosis is. But there are a number of analysts who have observed that this is masking the true inflation rate significantly, since the Federal Reserve has been basically in constant stimulus mode for the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. Wayne, these issues are very impactful, especially at a time when many people are living longer and thus relying on Social Security for longer periods, and people are taking it as soon as they can at the age of 62 as early as possible.
We have just 30 seconds to talk about the end of Newsweek as a print publication.
This is a sign of the times. Stopping printing in December, advertising revenue down 80%, circulation down 50%. Maybe not a surprise, but this is truly the end of an era after 79 years of publication. But, Wayne, this is radically changing the way we receive our news and we digest our news. It's affecting our own Richmond Times-Dispatch. I think it is very interesting that Time Magazine is now the only major news weekly left after all this time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to Brian Ford at RBC Wealth Management, who joins us each Monday morning. Portions of today's programming are made possible by Mark Nanavati, wishing his wife Julie a very happy birthday.
On a Monday, it's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm David.